Well, welcome to the Dallas Philosophers Forum. We're so glad you came to spend your evening with us tonight. Well, this evening we have a very interesting and informative presentation for you. Our guest speaker is Irene Flavor, who is the director of the Philosophy of Water Project at the University of North Texas. And do we have any UNT alumni here tonight by any chance? A few. Okay, I'm one. Okay, so all right, so we're represented. Okay, that's good. Anyway, the I think the title of your, I want to make sure, Thinking with Water. And so I'm really intrigued by how you do that. I'm sure we're going to find out. I grew up in Dallas, and it seems like my entire life we've been talking about doing something with the river that runs through Dallas. It seems like there's been plan after plan and program after program, and maybe we are now getting a little closer with that, so maybe we'll kind of hear about that tonight or at least think about it. You know, I was thinking, in Europe and other parts of the world, and a few cities in the U.S., they do have, major rivers, major waterways that, run through the city and so forth. But when I start thinking about running water, I always think about that movie, A River Runs Through It. And if you've seen that movie, it's a good movie, but the very end of it, to me, is sort of melancholic. Because you've kind of gone through the life of the characters, and there's one son who is now in late in life. His parents are gone. His brother has passed away. It was very much part of earlier part of the movie. And so there's sort of this this tranquil setting where he's it's around fly fishing in this river. And the water's flowing, and there's sort of this sense of how ephemeral life is, but yet the water and the earth goes on. And so I like the movie, but it's tough for me to watch the end of it because it makes me sad. So, anyway, just a bit of an aside. So, thank you for coming this evening. And we're looking forward to your presentation. By the way, I did want to plug the website that you should definitely check out. It's www.water.unt.edu.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really pleased to be here and at your forum. It's very fascinating to kind of see such an interesting philosophy. You don't have to write down much, but I made a little card for you, which will hand out. Can you hear me, Bob? Because I don't have a big voice. So raise your hand whenever you fall away. So I'm going to get a card with some information about the Philosophy of Water Project. So I'm actually not Irene Clayton, but Julian Flower.
I'm sorry.
Really good.
That's my Texas pronunciation.
That's very okay. I've been here for 10 years, and I'm originally Dutch. And so in my country, you pronounce it that way, and I still prefer that.
My regrets.
No, it's good. That's the way when I get a phone call from
another Texan,
I always say, oh, it's flavor, because I'm always like, what? For efficiency, I'm on the internet. So anyway, I'm just only saying that I'm not really an interesting person rather than to kind of explain the accent that you're here. It's not a dental accent. That's far away. We still speak differently over there, and I still haven't mastered it. So my title, Thinking with Water, is actually a very nifty title, because for you philosophers, I want immediately to point out a couple of themes that are underlying my thinking, my background in philosophy. And I'm really glad that you mentioned that film, The River Runs Through. Who knows that film? Who does not know it? Okay, but the majority knows it. Because it's really interesting. It's kind of in Montana, of course, fly fishing. I mean, you're not going to fly fish here, and you're not going to fly fish in the Mediterranean here. You have to go to Montana. It's quite a romantic film. I lived actually in Billings, Montana, and the film is aimed more in Missoula, Montana. It's not the Yellowstone River. But in a way, the film, the two brothers that were mentioned, one of them is kind of a minister-like type, more kind of philosophical, traditional philosopher type, and the other one is a real nature guy, and you know, kind of.
Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he's really great. Hangs out with the ladies and he's really muscular and fly fishing and whatsoever, and big guy. And like, so in a way, the whole film is actually kind of a metaphor of dualisms in that sense. So you have actually the nature guy, Brad Pitt, young years, the film is old. And then the kind of more cerebral thinking type. So the whole film is already predicated around a kind of dualism. You see what I'm saying? There are two worlds. There's, of course, a traditional platonic dualism of thinking on one hand, logos versus nature, the world of matter fuses at the other side. And the whole struggle is always like, well, how can we kind of deal with that matter, the material, physical, or for that matter, bodily, emotional, you know, all the traditional dualisms that come into play. How can the two of them deal with each other? And in a way, the river runs through it is kind of an interesting metaphor because the river connects and diverts. But these are all just, you know, to give you a kind of a little, just that for me, philosophically speaking, the tip of the iceberg of fascinating themes that come to life when you think about water. And on purpose, my title is Thinking with Water. It's not about water, but it's with, to try to think in and through the element. So to overcome exactly that dualistic structure, you think with water. It's guiding your thoughts. It's participating in the thought. It's not me thinking about it. You see, that's a big difference right there. And that's with, I've done actually in my PhD studies quite a study of Heraclitus, and he has a very nice a way to overcome exactly this kind of dualistic structure. He was pre-Socratic before Plato. And for him, water has been a very important medium. You know, the famous kind of sayings like, you cannot step in the same river twice, everything flows. So change is the constant parameter for someone like Heraclitus. You cannot step in the same river twice means like, you know, I mean, you step again in the same river, but the water has changed. So you are changed too, but the river is changed. So that's the famous kind of metaphors for water. So that kind of philosophy is behind the whole presentation. And even if I'm moving more into kind of what you might think is more of urban studies or cultural studies approach, these kind of questions are lingering behind the whole presentation. And the whole program that I'm from the University of North Texas, whole philosophy program is a philosophy program that's centered on environmental problems, environmental philosophy. We are 11 faculty members, and all of us approach the issue of the environment from a different angle. And so my background is more in continental philosophy, phenomenology, ancient philosophy, but also urban studies. critical theory, cultural criticism. So I dealt with a lot of different fields, and it's very interesting because you might have heard that a lot of universities are talking about interdisciplinarity, so they're trying to get different fields together and so forth. And in a way, the kind of philosophy that we do at UNT is profoundly interdisciplinary. And so there is, again, a thinking with. So you are not a philosopher who's kind of sitting in, usually his attic or in cell, and then we're going to apply those thoughts to society. No, we are thinking with problems, with issues. And not only problems, also with exciting things. Water is not just a problem. But it's a very different starting point. I call it sometimes empirical philosophy, which is kind of tricky because it's not empiricism, but it means like you start to think with issues that are alive, that are right there out of in front of you, with you, and so forth. So it's not just applied philosophy, but it's presupposed that you have thought about things before and then want to apply it, which is the case in a lot of ethical theories, like you apply a certain ethical structure, and then you come to the problem, or solving of the problem. We start always to think, and it means that your thinking is, like your drivers, always changing, because depending on what is at stake, you have to adjust. And if I have any kind of ethical theory, then it will be a theory about the capacity to adjust, which is really hard to be able to actually see things slightly differently, to translate what you are seeing into the language of other beings, including non-humans, to be able to translate what are they seeing, what is at stake for other critics, for not only animals, but also for the water. What does the water need? And I don't want to anthropomorphize, but it's really trying to understand what kind of logic the water has. And, words like hydrology is really the logic of water. Logos. Any logic, psychology, anthropology, name it, is all a reference to the logos of the hydrology, logos of the water, hydrology. Which is, of course, it's not philosophy, is of course not theology, which is another discipline, but we are beyond others, we are sophos, we are, which is Sophia, which is wisdom. And that's wisdom because it's not only the logic of something. It's not only the logic of the water, the logic of society, the logic of anthropos, but it's dealing with the with going beyond. I would always argue that philosophy intrinsically is interdisciplinary, always thinks with, always tries to overcome a dualism, but tries to see things from different angles, from different perspectives. In order to be able to see things from different perspectives, we have to be with the things. In order to see what the water needs, I have to kind of live with the water. Maybe literally, but definitely in my studies. And I have to see from that perspective, what does that entity need? So you see, profoundly, on every level, I think a philosopher is, by definition, an interdisciplinary figure. That's also the role that actually the philosopher had in a lot of ancient traditions, and not only even in ancient Greece, but definitely in ancient Greece. I mean, you probably know the metaphors of philosophy god, like the owl of Minerva flew over Athens at night. You know, everything was done and dealt with. The owl kind of flew over, like to see how everything kind of calms down. It's always that overarching approach which the Sophos, the wisdom, entails.
Sure.
That all of my thinking with water, you know, I'm going to think with water. And a lot of water, a lot of urban waterways are like this. And I took this picture at the LA River. I did a little research project by the LA River, and it was very fascinating because actually, and I will come back to that later in the presentation, but the LA River is one of the few rivers in the United States that has an excellent program of revitalizing the river in terms of urban renewal project. Often urban renewal, as we know it, means gentrification. Like traditionally in city formation, a lot of cities all over the world, definitely in Europe where I'm from, but also in the United States, originated around the river. Why? Because people need the water to drink, they need the water for transportation, for shipping, for trade, and so forth. So a river was a very functional unit. Of course, that all came to a level of development in the 19th and definitely in the 20th century, where a lot of industries were located along the river. And so, usually, in traditional cities, a lot of the older cities, the rivers are actually in the poor part of town, because that was where the industry was. So they are polluted, they are stinky, they are usually they created some floods, and so they were all straitjacketed, like here. So it's a poor place of town. In the 20th and 20th century, when you got actually a change of the urban structure through a lot of different factors, but like one of them, for example, shipping industry chains with, you know, with big containers. Well, it meant that shipping was not an issue anymore, the overlay in the cities themselves, because you need an huge port. The fishing industry changed, became more sea fishing instead of more local fishing. So on a lot of levels, you saw a cultural change that meant that actually the places around the river were kind of freed up from industry. A lot of industry moved to the countryside or overseas, to so-called developing countries and so on. So at a lot of levels you've got a change, and this is very important. I mean, before you start to think like, oh, you know, I came to philosophy, you know, I mean, I came to sociology or whatever. Now this is what thinking with means. That's why I call it empirical philosophy. You need to know a lot of facts in order to be able to think with a river, because a lot of rivers are urban rivers. Like our own river is an urban river. And a lot, to those rivers, a lot has happened in our history, and especially in the last kind of 5 minutes of the, or say the last second of time, maybe the 20th century. A lot has changed in that era. It's very fascinating to see what actually happens, what is necessary for change to take place, which is a very important question if your ethics is one of adjustment. You cannot just adjust to anything. You have to know what you are adjusting to. What are the trends? What are possibilities? What are opportunities? Well, right now we are in a fascinating era. I always tell my students, and I'm already old, and your average age is also rather old, but my man, student is young, this is the next generation. And, you know, sometimes students have a feeling that it's kind of hopeless time. It's a fascinating time we are living in, because things are just coming at a kind of edge. And especially our rivers are just so fascinating, because we are at this kind of pivotal moment in which we get a complete transformation of an era of industrialization, which is kind of moving into a next era. What the next era will be is still totally unclear, but what is not clear is that a lot of cities all over the world, definitely in the Western world, are reinventing themselves as urban space, urban renewal around their rivers. So what does that mean usually? Gentrification. What does that mean usually? Elbowing out the kind of poor people that were living in the dirty, stinking, like river, because you're not a functional. It was called poverty. So you want to live there, you want to live there, you know. You don't want to kind of be this kind of, you know, connection. So that's what it is. That's why LA is so fascinating, because Los Angeles started a very careful urban renewal project around the LA River. And as I said, I did a little bit of research on the LA River, and because it's kind of a fascinating river, and it got totally straitjacketed in the 1930s. And I was here, next week here, in the high school, and I asked, I was looking for the beginning of the LA River, which is kind of hard to find. So I asked the kids in the high school, and I was like, you know, do you know where the LA River starts? They never heard of the LA River. It's right there. Point is, like in their imagination, their cultural imagination, their sense of things, their culture, this is not an LA River. Of course this is not an LA River. This could never be the theme of a film like A River Runs Through.
You should have mentioned Terminator, the Victoria.
Oh, right. but this is the LA River. And I was kind of so glad with that answer, because it confirmed completely my whole philosophy of what, it's not really a river. It doesn't feel like a river. It's not an experience of river. So that makes, that kind of sets the stage for a fascinating question. And if anything, what a philosopher does is to ask questions. I mean, I'm sure you've had a lot of people, you know, and it's the kind of traditional Socratic method is not like telling you what to do, but it's like, huh, what do you mean by that? Why do you think that? How comes? That's what a philosopher does. So here the question is, like, how can we foreground a river like this? How can we reconnect people to a river again, to their water bodies again, in a time and era in which we want to have the safety of the flood control. We don't want to just take away all this concrete and say, well, let it flow. You know, we don't want to have water in our living room. I don't want that. We don't want it to be too natural, to be river control, right? So there needs to be good infrastructure. That's a precondition. So the question becomes, how can we reconnect to kind of infrastructural water? It's a fascinating question. It's not like just going back to nature, let's all go to the woods, and that's the kind of dichotomy in a river and still, like still water or river, and then there is culture. So how do you do it? It's never happy marriage. Well, it should be. But we need to kind of also love our infrastructure. We need to relate back to these kind of waterways in an equitable way, so in a fair way, not only for a couple of wealthy people, but for the whole society. We need to create a water consciousness. Let's have the next slide. So water in our culture is, in a certain way, we are kind of alienated from water, but I always tell my students, you know, it's so interesting that in the last 10, 15 years, water has kind of percolated up into our consciousness again. Like you get H2O stores like this. So this is a really expensive brand of perfume and body stuff and so forth. Maybe Dallas, I don't think Dallas is a store. Do we have a big store? Well, only fancy towns. We don't get one. Let me get up there. But like Vancouver, Los Angeles, Tokyo, Amsterdam, Paris, they have, actually Amsterdam doesn't have one. They all have an H2O store. And it's like you can buy body there, you know, or material of body lotion and so forth. And it's like French cuisine, you know, you get a big plate with too little of whatsoever on it, you know, in its own presentation. Similarly, you know, you go in this store, I love it. You go in there, it's virtually nothing. You can buy, like, perfume for body lotion for, like, you know, 20 $25. You know, I only look at it. I said, fascinating. Then I got a little gift with whatever. I should have brought it because it's kind of cute. And I said, oh, I'll think about it. I'm never going to buy that. But it's, I mean, those people don't think that there was just some owner of this brand and thought, oh, let's go and raise money. No, no, no. They've done a lot of research. What will be the fascinating name? Advertisement does a lot of research. What is implicitly in our culture? They foreground what is unconsciously in our culture. So apparently, H2O water is kind of something that we find fascinating. This brand was not possible 25 years ago. But like 10 years ago when it started, it's possible. Like, apparently it was something that started to percolate up into our consciousness. The next one. Often in classes I give the students the assignment to get advertisements, and so you get this, and I made it in the large, but water is unused, you know, it's all about endless. I hope from now on you will kind of look at that from that perspective, like, wow, you know, they use water, and you kind of, oh, water is water. So apparently something. But actually most of our water is being locked away, is being straitjacketed, is being, so the water that is in those kind of fancy advertisements and the real existing water in everyday life is actually more like this. 70% of our fresh water is being used for irrigation. I lived in California for a while when, like, you know, it's all irrigation ditches. And of course what happens a lot with our water is depending on subdivision. The next town center in Denton, the Razor Ranch, and you see that all over the west, you get areas that were ranch land turned into city, which is a very, very important, has a very important effect on water, because you shift from permeable surface to impermeable surface. So all the water runoff doesn't come into the groundwater anymore. So I just put those slides together to give the variety of ways that water lives in our society. Bring it to the fore, next one. So water issues are always associated with resource dynamics of a whole watershed. That's why the permeable surface slide is so important. So these are the larger kind of issues in the background when you are dealing with water issues. And the main point of my talk is to take a cultural analysis seriously in order to be able to deal with water issues. We need to know what lives in our culture. Because if that's not taken into consideration, then we cannot have any kind of chance to get a sustainable water management in place, because there's no commitment. So that brings us back to my first slide. Like, how can you create a commitment, a concern, an interest of people into their water bodies? There's apparently a mentality surfacing that water is important, as I showed slides of the advertisements and so forth. But then there's still a kind of disconnect to the real water bodies, which are locked up in infrastructural irrigation ditches and so forth. So the question is, like, how can you reconnect and